Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you all for coming and welcome to the University of Minnesota Bookstores. Sherry Kwan Lee, and she's the author of the 2002 book Chinese Blackbird. She is also a distinguished alumni of North Hennepin Community College. She's program associate for the College of Continuing Education Split Rock Arts Program Summer Workshops and the Online Mentoring for Writers Program at the University of Minnesota, and has been part of PEP, which is Personal Enrichment Program, team for 7 years. She earned a BA and an MFA in creative writing at the University of Minnesota. Recently retired from 10 years of adjunct teaching at Metropolitan State University St. Paul, Kwan Lee facilitates community writing workshops at Intermedia Arts and elsewhere. And she is here today to talk about her latest book, How to Write a Suicide Note. So please join me. Sherry's going to read first. Please join me in welcoming Anya Ochtenberg and Sherry Kwan Lee.
Thank you, Terry. I always start with an unpaid advertisement. I work at the Split Rock Arts Program at the University of Minnesota in the College of Continuing Education, which is part of the Personal Enrichment Programs. And my colleagues, some of my colleagues are here today. And I just want them to know that whenever I do go for a reading, I do talk about the Split Rock Arts Program. Hello, Alex. Wow. And just to say that we also have an online mentoring for writers program, which is totally web-based. And truly, I tried it out because I work for the program, and Sharon Dubiago was my mentor. And if it hadn't been for Sharon, well, she was kind of the motivation for me actually getting this book going and written and published. I know suicide. My grandmother committed suicide. So did an uncle. So did a cousin's wife. My niece slashed her wrists. I remember being at the hospital with her. I have a grandnephew, 17 years old, that just this past year tried to commit suicide. None of us know about it until he complained of being sick. And it turned out that he damaged his kidney from taking pills. I myself ended up in emergency twice in suicide attempts. My other attempts were a little more feeble, but just as serious. So I don't use the metaphor of suicide frivolously. And it's not easy to write about. And that said, after my book was published and I went back and looked at it, I realized I really didn't talk about it much. I kind of avoided it. Instead, what I did was use it as a metaphor for the things in my life, the racist, sexist, classist things that were killing me, that are killing me, or whatever. But then I read a quote by Clarissa Pinkola Estes that made me know that I was on the right path to understanding. She says, "What must I give more death to today in order to generate more life? What do I know should die but am hesitant to allow to do so? What must die in me in order for me to live, to love? What not beauty do I fear? Or what use is the power of the not so beautiful to me today? What should die today? What should live? What life am I afraid to give birth to? If not now, when?" There are many women in my life, not necessarily in my life, but there are many women, especially women of color writers, who have saved my life. Their story is very familiar. The anger, the pain, the confusion, the loneliness, the abuse, the struggle, the triumph, the beauty, the passion, the creativity, the love. Nikki Giovanni wrote, "And if ever I touched a life, I hope that life knows that I know that touching was and still is and always will be the true revolution." Alice Walker asked, "What can I give you to help you stay strong when you feel the world is turned against you and that you are standing, perhaps even naked, absolutely alone? I give you this poem." So I'm going to read a few poems from Chinese Blackbird, which has just been reprinted by Loving Healing Press, which is great because now I don't have to sell it out of the trunk of my car anymore. It was originally published by the Asian American Renaissance in 2002. And the first poem is Chinese Black Woman. I am pregnant with myself, gestation 50 years, revision, 60 years. I will come out standing on my head, knowing truth is upside down. No one will slap this Chinese Black Woman or proclaim her identity. I will pass out pink, blue cigars, celebrate. I think it belongs. I belong in the book of Guinness Book of World Records because that's an awful long pregnancy of 60 years. But at least I have an excuse for midlife fat. I don't know why I'm so nervous. I've done millions of readings, but I am. And this is a poem that is often requested. Black women often write about hair, and this is my hair story. It's called Magnolia Cafe. We ate red beans and rice, blackened catfish with hot pepper sauce, and drank lemon water. The conversation flip-flopped: graduate school, marijuana, poetry. She said Vanessa Williams didn't become black until she lost the Miss America title, and she still is only black when she needs to be. And of course, OJ has never been black. I had been questioning my own blackness all weekend at the Celebration of Black Writing Conference. What is black? Skin? Attitude? Language? Hair? The black manager at our local, specializes in ethnic hair salon, said, I don't have black hair. Who told me that I did? Mama, I tried to say, but before I could, my black friend, her hair and dreadlocks, screamed, who are you to say my friend isn't black? She has hair just like my mom's. Are you saying my mom isn't black? All those Minnesota ladies in and out of the tanning booth getting an earful. Her hair might be mixed, but it certainly isn't black. Were they talking about hair or the color of my skin? What is black? Are there membership do's and don'ts? My culture is white. Mama had a passing Jones. My ethnicity is multi-complex. People assume I am Italian, Puerto Rican, Mexican, Native American, etc., etc. I speak the truth, black, but I lack credibility. Perhaps I should only eat at Asian restaurants, or better yet, Ole and Lena's Pancake House. Yesterday I braided my mama's hair. Lenore, who works at Mama's nursing home, asked Mama, you look Indian, what are you? I knew Mama wasn't going to respond, so after a long pause I said, she's black. I had to undo the braid before Mama would go down to the cafeteria for watermelon. What is black? One drop or a gallon? A popularity contest? A poor me contest? Can you have money and still be black? Be educated and still be black? Have a Chinese father and still be black? Have an Irish great-grandfather, son of a plantation owner, and still be black? Black or not, can I still eat red beans and rice? And sometimes we don't know the exact truth or have all the answers, and we have to kind of imagine. So I imagine I'm a virgin birth. And the title of this poem is called Parthenogenesis, which is a scientific term for virgin birth. It's in sections, but I'm not going to read the section numbers. Mama swears she didn't have sex with her husband after my sister Sheila was born. Abracadabra, Dad disappeared, but I arrived 10 months later. The whip-tailed lizard and the dandelion also are sperm-free. The water flea says yes when it needs to, and Molly's just needs stimulation. Scientists claim sex is a mystery. I like a good mystery. A friend asked, if your dad isn't your father, how can you be Chinese? I replied, if my great-grandfather is white, how can I be black? My mother is Sarah Colley. Am I a woman or a man? What gender is Jesus? In spite of mythology, virgin births will always be daughters. But couldn't I be the son father almost waited for? If only he had used his imagination instead of his magic. Abracadabra. From Chinese Blackbird. And from my new book, and actually the full title is How to Write a Suicide Note, Serial Essays That Saved a Woman's Life. That second part is kind of important. I'm a hockey mom. I just thought I'd say that because sometimes, there's this world of stereotypes out there, and being a hockey mom can mean something to some people, and to others it means other things. Identity is very complex. This is a poem about my Chinese father. Well, actually, it's not about him. It's about someone asked me to write about him, and I really didn't want to. So you want me to write about my Chinese father. Asians are in, you say. Write about your father. Did I tell you he was short? I am angry. This is a good time to write. Kung Fu, Lucky Bamboo, Chinese calligraphy. Asians sell books, you say. Write about your father. Prosperity, good fortune, happiness, and health. When you are angry, keep writing. East meets West. My father left China when his father died, left his mother, brother, and sister, never to see them again. I am not angry with my father. An immigrant, father was 9, a kid fending for himself, selling vegetables off the back of a flatbed truck. Your father is exotic, you say. Write about your father. Mandarin collars and takeout food box purses. Have you ever seen those? Made in China, mail order brides, girl babies. My father left me when I was 5. He was supposed to marry a Chinese bride, but he gave up all things Asian. Fed us chow mein. Stopped speaking Chinese. Prayed Catholic. Your father is Chinese, you say. Write about your father. Father liked to gamble, bet black babies and a wife for a whiter kind of life. I have much to say about my father. Father went to college. Mother had an 8th grade education. I don't want to hear about your black mother, you say. Tell me about your Chinese father. Mother was born here. Slavery, not a choice. Living in America has different meanings for different people. Father was proud. Mother ashamed. Neighbors had guns. I have more to say about my father. Stop. Read what you have written. Stop. Play rock and roll music. Dance. Shower. There are no photos of me and my father together. Dress if you had some place to go, something to do, someone to be with who understands. Wear something sexy, something quirky, something thematic, high heels or steel-toed boots, something that will make men pay attention. Walk out the door, get in your car, have fun, buy flowers, be beautiful. Don't think about your father or the man in the woods who is sleeping. Later, there will be time to revise. In this poem I'm going to read, because a number of my colleagues are here, a number of people from the College of Continuing Education, St. Paul campus, thank you for being here. You're probably going to hear more about me than you'll ever want to hear. But this is for you, and this is actually was inspired by a colleague, actually my boss, who was cleaning one day, and it's called Avoidance About Writing. Recently, a colleague started cleaning shared office space in a fury, frantically dusting and polishing and sweeping and moving clutter from one environment to another or trashing it. She admitted she was avoiding yet another challenging job responsibility. Soon, everyone in the office was cleaning. The writing process for me is about avoidance. I don't write. I clean my house, I go shopping, I watch a movie, sex, sleep. Eventually, the writing will win. No dirt, no money, no libido. I gather my tools, coffee, cigarettes, potato chips, red licorice, and dark chocolate. Sit at a dining room table. Shuffle papers. I pee. I smoke a cigarette. I drink coffee. Writing happens when it happens. What is it you know you must get rid of? I know something, or I wouldn't be sitting here. Writing is a literary vacuum. It sucks up and eliminates. I write on recycled paper. Slash and surrender, exchange dead words with alive ones. As the first draft simmers, I continue to revise, scrutinize the tone, the rhythm, the meaning. Draft number 2 is ready to print before draft number 1 has finished printing. Each new draft allows me to live vicariously. Clutching draft number 2, I disappear to smoke a cigarette and read aloud. If I'm at a house in the woods, I read to the Gordon Setter. My creativity exhilarates me. A sassy word, a delicate word, a word that sings or a word that singes, tires me. If the man of the house is around, he will stand next to me, listening, smoking. He will touch me, kiss me, distract me. Eventually, I will toss the writing aside, lovemaking part of the process. On a good day, the process repeats itself, and again, I've got cleaning and sex on my mind. I'm not reading any of the really dark pieces. This is called Love Letter, You Should Have Been There. And this is my last poem. Love Letter, You Should Have Been There. Dearest, this is not a Dear John letter. This is a love letter. A love letter to you or to me. I'm not sure. Won't be sure until the writing is done, until the process has exhausted itself, until the book has been written and on the shelf. The process has not always been the same, will not always be the same. I didn't understand change until the last sentence presented itself. Future is not found through complacency. To write is a process, a journey. To live is the same. The process for one poem, one story, one book is never the same. Change is the only truth. Process depends on overall character, depends on the heart of the book, the blood flowing. To end a relationship is a process. What worked for the last ending won't work for the next one, for this one. Won't work to end our relationship. Our hearts and blood are sick and thin and tired. The process of who we are goes back several generations. We are connected in ways we will never talk about, not connected in ways we say we are. Our relationship, like plastic, won't disintegrate. It is possible to light a match, to set fire, to melt, to liquefy. It is not possible to write the last chapter. It is not possible to disappear. This chapter I am writing is the first, another first chapter, another beginning. We will gain composure, solidify, contaminate. I need a new process. I need to mix glass with stone, with sweat. I need to break down, to sever, to turn to salt, to slice, to mash, to grind, to speak, to sing, to sway, to leap. I need to set aside stale processes, unworthy of this journey, this cycle, this new beginning. I need a new list, no rules, funky aphorisms. I need jasmine and eucalyptus. I need conversation. I need pizzazz. I need a photo, a self-portrait of the person I want to become, the person I already am. I need a photo of me locked in a frame that breathes, that flows, that fluctuates, yet remains stable. I will throw away splintered frames with cracked glass. I can condense, simplify, and adjust to one photo, one me. You are not in this photo, and you are not stored in a closet in a cardboard box. You will never be recycled again. You should have been here last winter when I grabbed a young man on the street who merely said hello. I was hungry and ate and sipped a glass of wine. You should have been here last spring. My prayers were answered, hostas in a borrowed garden. Next year, there will be continuity. There will be beauty. You should have been here last summer when the heat and humidity rendered me naked on silk sheets, my sweat sensuous, my bed tossing. You should have been here this fall when leaves turned without you, when I traveled to New Orleans and trumpets blared. This is about lonely. This is about love. This is about driving to the woods for a fix of your skin, for conversation, for definition, desperation. This is about the 5-mile radius you live in, I live far away with no amenities except diversity, which is oxygen, not a well with soft water. This is about painting ceilings, fixing cars, watching movies, riding bikes, and eating sushi, about things lost, about the color purple. This is about family and dogs and neighbors, about exclusion. This is about history, about scotch, about coffee, about sex, about cigarettes, about the future, about nursing homes. This is about ministers and priests, about fantasies and horrors, about what we despise, what we desire, about velvet trousers, about heavily starched shirts. This is about the sting of what I thought I could never have, the bite of knowing it still doesn't fit, the ache of pretend. This is about not being mean. It's about metaphor. It's about getting at truth without spitting. It's about a new way of writing, a new way of living. It's about story, about understanding story. It's about kindness. It's about love, about what gets in the way of love. It's about goodbye. It's about hello. It's about the lost art of letter writing. It's about not knowing how to end. Clarissa Pinkola Estes says, love in its fullest form is a series of deaths and rebirths. We let go of one phase, one aspect of love, and enter another. Passion dies and is brought back. Pain is chased away and surfaces another time. To love means to embrace and at the same time to withstand many, many endings and many, many beginnings, all in the same relationship. Thank you very much.
Thank you.